Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. It's number 21, if you're keeping count, and it's Monday, April the 16th, as the red recording light glows all around the United Kingdom, ready to be listened to all around the world. Joining me, Ewan Spence, as always, we have the three commentators, pundits, experts, and voyeurs all at one from the allaboutwindowsphone.com website. First up, a man with his bags packed and he's ready to go, Rafe Blanford. Hello, Rafe.
Yes, hello, everybody. Thank you for that introduction, Ewan. Now we're 21. I guess we can go and drink alcohol in the States, should we want to, or rather the podcast can.
And how does a podcast drink alcohol? I'll think of a good pun for that one. But we also introduce David Gilson up there in Hull. Afternoon, David.
Hello, Ewan. It's very good to be here. And I'm thinking of mental images of a drunken podcast already.
Yeah, the problem is it has to be in America. So it's going to be on stuff like Budweiser, which isn't really beer. So it's going to struggle. Maybe some cider would help. Steve Litchfield also joins us. Given that he's further south, he gets the cider joke. Hello, Steve.
Hello there. Yes, cider sounds very good right now. It's nice and sunny and hot. So yes, please.
Yeah, there we go. So we've decided the podcast's drink of choice is cider. On to more technological silicon type things. It has been, as always, an interesting week. Windows Phone continues to grow. More units going into more hands of more people all around the world. More handsets getting ready to go to the press. Rafe, we'll come to you first on this one. It's another variant of the Nokia Lumia 610. But this one has a little bit of a magical difference, doesn't it?
It does indeed. Following in the footsteps of the 610, which was announced, of course, at MWC, and the 610C, which was announced in China a little while back, we now have the Lumia 610 NFC. And as the name would suggest, it adds near-field communication, the sort of form of wireless communication to the 610. It's actually running the latest version of Windows Phone 7.5, and Nokia themselves have actually put an NFC software stack on this, because obviously it's not currently supported by the Windows Phone platform by default. This NFC functionality, well, we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's an interesting one. This is going to be available in Q3. Orange, which is one of the operators here in Europe, and actually worldwide as well, is kind of the launch partner for this. It's going to be on their network first, sometime in the third quarter. It's not going to affect the rollout of the Lumia 610, kind of the original version, if you like. We're still expecting that to come out sometime in the next month or two.
There was a question that came up on the website, which is, why are there so many different variants of the 610? Why can't they just make one and be done with it? And I'm suspecting this is because the 610 is targeted at the budget-conscious buyers in networks and on the high streets, Rafe, yes?
Yeah, that's probably a good reason. Also, we have to remember that Nokia is relatively new to Windows Phone, so it's moving at a fast pace. In terms of manufacturing, adding in an NFC chip would kind of be an extra stage in the process, so it doesn't necessarily add a dramatic cost having this particular variant. And for the 610C, it's really just a matter of the 3G radios in it. So the radio variants are understandable, because by just having the right sort of radio in it, you keep the cost down and it's market specific. NFC is a little bit different. I suspect they've had a request in from an operator, or Orange obviously in this case, to have an NFC in the handset, and so they've obliged, but they weren't able to put NFC into the original one and keep the timings going, as is, you know, probably seen from that Q2 versus Q3 availability. And yes, there'll be a cost factor in there. I mean, NFC chips and aerials probably only add a handful of dollars, a handful of euros to the actual cost of the device. And so while it would be easier in one sense to just have the one variant, it's not a big dramatic cost difference in terms of producing these in the factories that people might imagine.
And of course, if you add in, say, 50 euro cents at a component level, then it becomes 1 euro from the manufacturer, then 2 euros when you get to Nokia, then 4 euros to the distributor, and then another 10 euros on the price when it gets to the high street. And when you're talking about free handsets at a minimal contracts, 15, 20 pounds a month in the UK, for example, that 10 euros, has bubbled up into something quite significant. So there are arguments for keeping that weighed down. And now we've got NFC. But what can we actually use it for, Rafe? Because we have NFC on Nokia's Symbian handsets, and they've got a big range of peripherals. I mean, the obvious question is, will they work with Windows Phone now?
Yes, they will. Nokia have a range of NFC accessories, and what this is really about is easier pairing of Bluetooth accessories. I think we've all gone through the hassle of having to enter a pairing code, well, having first put the devices into discovery mode and all of that. With NFC, you don't have to do any of that. All you do is tap the accessory to the phone, and it will automatically do the pairing process and connect. And also, when you come to connect it to the accessory again, you can just tap it to connect. So, for example, something like a wireless music speaker, you get the phone, you start playing music, you tap it to the speaker, and music starts playing through the speaker. And then when you want to switch it back again, you just tap it again. So it works really seamlessly. I mean, it's for those that have used these NFC accessories, it's much more intuitive. It's much easier to use. And you think, why didn't someone think of this earlier? And yes, as you say, Nokia has a range of these that will work with their Migo, their Symbian, and obviously now their Windows Phone products. There's sort of the traditional Bluetooth headsets. There's also stereo Bluetooth headsets, wireless speakers, and a wireless music receiver. And Nokia actually announced another Bluetooth headset. I think it was the 130 along with the 610. So there's now sort of 7 or 8 accessories that can be used like this. You can also use NFC for quite a few other applications. I think the other one that will be big on the 610 NFC is reading tags. So this is you tap on a tag and some kind of action happens or some information pops up. So for example, they can be triggered to open a web page or launch Nokia Maps and open a specified place. So for example, businesses use these for promotional opportunities like us on Facebook, check in on Foursquare, follow us on Twitter. But they could also be used for providing additional information, maybe to museum exhibits, sort of a bit like the QR codes, or maybe access to timetables at a bus stop. You know, they're pretty flexible, and you know, you can actually have applications intercept things and then trigger certain responses on the phone. That's more down to the software. And Nokia is saying there's going to be a certain amount of that, you know, shipping on the first version of the 610 NFC. At the moment, it would appear there's no sort of picture or contact exchange on the Windows Phone devices as there is on Symbian, but I imagine that's something that would be added in software at some point. I mean, it's purely a software functionality. The other thing of note with NFC functionality that Nokia announced with this handset is that they're already certified for Visa's PayWave and MasterCard's PayPass contactless payment services. Those are the ones where, you know, some people may already have credit cards with this technology built in, where you just wave it over sort of the traditional credit card terminal and you can do payments that way. Instead, you just have your phone that you wave over it. That can be automatic, although in this case, you're probably going to have to go into a wallet application and sort of activate the correct card there. In terms of this service being available, moment payments, we've commented in the podcast before, they're pretty hard to do because there's all kinds of legal loopholes you have to jump through and regulatory requirements. But what this certification does is it cuts down on the time it would take an operator to launch a handset, and actually Nokia have kind of a demo application ready to go, so operators could, if you like, repurpose that. You know, getting these things certified is quite a lengthy process because, as you can imagine, with something like payment, there's all kinds of security and encryption things that you have to meet quite stringent requirements. So it's interesting to see that come in. There'll be no announcements about whether there'll be any payment services with the 610 NFC when it launches. We may hear something from Orange nearer the time, but as I say, this certification, which is actually done, the secure element of this, I should add, is on the SIM card with a connection via simple wire protocol. That's the one that operators prefer because it gives them more control over customer ownership. As I said, there's nothing announced yet, but we may well see something in time. And the certification is really about making sure those services can launch as painlessly and as quickly as possible for operators who do want to do them.
I was just thinking about the 610 quite a bit lately. It's always seemed to me as if it's the Windows Phone equivalent of the C7. It looks very similar, and now with having NFC, it's more like the Symbian 701. Whenever I've seen this device, I've had an emotional reaction, and I've instantly wanted it. Really like the look of it. But then as a power user, it's lower specifications because it's running the version previously or officially never known as Tango. It's kind of put me off. And I was just wanted to go around everyone, let's say in alphabetical order. Do you think the 610 is maybe going to turn off power users? And do you think NFC is going to change anyone's mind about it?
Oh, that's how I'm going to work through the alphabet. That puts me first. Right then. The 610 is not for power users. Simple as that. The 610 is, you look at it, and it really does look designed for the network. It's like, you know, the 5800 was a nice touchscreen phone, but it really was the one, the variants of the 5800, this is back in the Symbian line for all us new listeners, what's one that the networks just literally ate up. I mean, Virgin had different variants of 5230, the 5330, all bundle of that. The 610 is going to be Nokia's Windows Phone workhorse. It's going to go in at the market. It's easily customizable, as we've seen with NFC, and it's what networks want. So you have to remember that Nokia's customers, the majority of the time, are not people in the high street. They are the networks, the Carrefour warehouses, the Oranges, the Vodafones, and everything. They've been asked by their customer for an NFC variant of a low-spec Windows phone. They've delivered it. So yes, the 610 is matching up the customer demand because they've been asked for that. The reason they've been asked for that and whether it will sell on the high street or not, that's, you know, the networks will have looked at that. You know, the networks are big and everybody complains about them, but they're not stupid. They're in it to make money. So I actually think that they're going to do very well. Right, Steve, do you want to jump in next? Because I know there's alphabetical order, but, you know, I can pretend I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, this is a play very much for the network thinking ahead to when the infrastructure and the payment providers are in place, that the NFC can really start rolling out properly in 2013. Yes, I know I've been saying for a long time that 2012 is the year NFC will take off. By that, I mean it's the year when NFC will arrive in more and more and more handsets at all ends of the price spectrum, so that when we have a certain critical mass in the market, then the services, then everything really exciting can take off. And no power user in the mind, no All About Windows Phone listener in their right mind is going to buy a 610 NFC, but maybe they'll buy it for their partner. Maybe they'll buy it as a future-proofing thing for their teenager. Who knows? But certainly not one for me.
Yeah, I agree with Steve and what Ewan have said there. It's really about operator demand. I mean, I used the 610 at MWC pretty briefly, and I didn't actually think the differences were all that noticeable. Of course, you know, there are things around some of the multitasking elements and how long they kind of stay in memory, as well as some background processors, but a lot of the core functionality is still there. Power users probably will notice them, so the 610 isn't suitable for them. But I will say the design of the 610 I really liked, more so than the 710. I think I've commented before, it felt like it had an extra 3 months design work in it, probably because it did, to be honest. But I also think, you're going to see right here, you know, this is about providing something to the operator. They want to start getting NFC handsets in the pipeline. And I suspect Orange is going to do some kind of payment service in some of its operating countries. And having a handset like this, you know, gives them extra options there. You know, I suspect their requirements before too long will say there has to be NFC in every handset that costs more than £100. For the power user, you know, NFC is attractive, but it's not that attractive yet, because ultimately, while the accessory thing is convenient, it's not going to change your mind over which headset to get. Which handset to get. And the other services that have NFC just aren't quite there yet. You know, we're kind of waiting for that network effect to kick in. And I think it's pretty clear that NFC will be on all the next generation Nokia Windows Phone devices. In one sense, this almost gives them a chance to make sure they've, you know, got it right, and they can look at the user experience and how all that works and maybe learn quite a bit from it. But I'd fully expect any handsets announced down the line, maybe not the next one, but certainly the ones coming in the second half of the year, have NFC functionality built in. So I think it won't really be a choice that any power user has to make.
So moving on from the 610 to a slightly bigger number, the Lumia 900, of course, is dominating the coverage on Windows Phone websites, feeds, and in general tech columns with its launch on AT&T in America last weekend. But it's not been plain sailing. There's been a bit of a connectivity bug. Steve's been having a little look at this in more detail. Steve, what exactly is going on here? And Nokia have turned it around to their benefit as well, by the looks of it.
I wouldn't say benefit in that if this had never happened and it had been a totally smooth rollout, I'm sure they would have settled for that. But they have responded very, very quickly. In short, a memory management issue was discovered in the OS that, in some cases, could lead to a loss of data connectivity. Basically, what this means is the device loses signal and you have to reboot it. And it's purely a software bug, purely OS bug, and it has now been patched. And if you plug your Lumia 900 presumably in America. I don't know whether you've tried it, Ewan, into Zoom desktop or the Windows Phone Mac connector, you will see the update. And it's purely a firmware update and highly recommended. It should sort out the problem. And there's also a thing whereby Nokia has provided as an option, customers who purchased or will purchase the Lumia 900 before April 21st will automatically receive a $100 credit on the device. So whether you've patched it or not, you still get your $100 back on your phone bill, and bringing the price of the device down to less than zero for quite a few people. So very good deal all around, really, and good PR for Nokia for responding so quickly.
Now, we have to be clear, that's a $100 credit on your AT&T bill. If you've bought it unlocked from somewhere like Clover Expanse or something, you don't get the $100. This is purely through your AT&T account, okay? So it's almost but not quite comprehensive. And but I do think it's a smart one, because unlike, you know, other phone manufacturers, they've actually stood up, went, there's a problem, here's a solution, here's what we're going to do for it. And David, it's made a lot of people really happy and pay attention to Nokia again, hasn't it?
Yes, it's like Apollo 13. It was the successful failure. The thing that Microsoft and especially Nokia are doing with Windows Phone, they are going all out to create positive feelings and create a positive vibe around the platform. And basically, with this rollout in America, the main thing they needed to do was not screw up. And the thing is with other companies that, you know, maybe the established incumbents, if you want to call them that, when they do have a problem, there does seem to always be a feeling of like a corporate firewall or a sense of arrogance and not really caring that there's a problem. It's like, okay, guys, we'll get it sorted out. Just get off our backs. And there's always a feeling about that, which makes people feel hostile and towards companies and not trust them. Nokia have completely done the opposite to that. They have responded, most importantly, timely, apart from doing it very amicably. So I think they've completely smoothly papered over this, and it could have gone a lot worse.
I think the important thing is the amount of comments that I'm seeing around that just say Nokia now has a new fan for life because they've done this. Okay, there is going to be a short-term impact. You know, the first 2 weeks of sales are basically, there's going to be nothing coming in from the handset. Of course, you still have the contract for AT&T to make the money. But Rafe, I mean, this is actually, I mean, Americans love politeness and contriteness and people who stand up and go, I must not tell a lie, it was me who knocked down that cherry tree. Okay, it's unhappy that they had the issue, but they've dealt with this, you know, 100% the correct way, over and above what many would have expected.
They did, and it's not just Americans who like this sort of thing. I think everyone is pleased to have good customer service, and this is essentially what the story is. You know, the $100 thing actually means that people are effectively being given the handset and paid 1 cent to take it. I mean, okay, yes, there is all the contract stuff there as well. And you mentioned that people who bought it sort of SIM-free won't get the benefit. Actually, that should apply to no one, because this handset is only available with AT&T service. You can get a no-commitment option, but even those users should also get the $100 on their bill, as should anyone who bought it through third-party retailers, you know, be that Amazon or Walmart or indeed anybody else. To my mind, in some ways, the content of this is less important than the speed in which they delivered it. You know, they came out within about 24 hours of the first reports emerging of this bug. You know, that in itself is quite impressive response time. And they said, yep, $100 credit, and we're going to get you a software fix in, you know, about a week's time. I think it was scheduled for something like the 16th. So today, it was actually delivered last Friday, so sort of 3 or 4 days early, depending on how you count time. That's a really, really quick response. I mean, quite how they got it through quality assurance and testing and through the operator certification, I don't know. It does suggest to me that it was probably a software update already in the planning, and that, you know, they fixed this bug and were able to deliver very quickly. But, you know, give them the credit. They moved very quickly. I can't think of any software bug in a big smartphone like this that's been launched so quickly. But also, it does kind of tell me that this is a change from the traditional Nokia. Expecting the Nokia of 18 months ago to deliver a software update and the kind of hold their hands up that quickly, I don't think it would have really happened. I know a lot of Symbian users got frustrated sometimes with the amount of time it took to deliver a software update. So, you know, credit to Nokia. And it does give, you know, quite strong evidence to the line that Stephen Elop, Nokia CEO, keeps talking about, how about he's increased the clock speed and the responsiveness of the company. And I think Steve's right. it would have been better if this had never happened at all, but they handled it as well as they could, and they've made won a lot of praise, and you sort of almost go, well, the positive attention they received from this outweighs any negative impact that there may have been. So, you know, if only all smartphone companies could handle problems quite so openly, honestly, and as quickly as this, I think there'll be a lot more happy customers out there.
Yeah, it's funny you should say it, Riff, because I was just thinking, I mean, that we're all saying how wonderful this is, but actually, this is how it should be.
Exactly. And
it's quite a sad state of affairs that when someone does do the right thing, we're all waving hands in the air, singing happy songs.
I mean, we accept that problems happen, but this is the response you should get every time. Inevitably, people have compared this to the Apple aerial situation where they said there was no problem and gave everyone a free bumper and looked the other way and misdirection, all of that. I don't think it's unfair to cascade just Apple, because there are plenty of companies that have done this, including Nokia themselves. But yes, it does make me smile a little bit. You think, no, this is what they should be doing, because after all, you buy a product, you have an expectation that it should work bug-free and that updates and fixes should be delivered. But let's just say we hope that this kind of pattern of customer service will continue long into the future.
Yes, and anybody who wants to bring up the Nokia N97 debacle, Nokia have changed. look up the history books, kid, and you'll love it. We do have good news on the 900, though. We don't have anything quantitative, though. We haven't had anybody actually come up and say we have sold X Lumias. But Rafe, we have a lot of incidental and anecdotal information that says the Lumia is going down incredibly well.
We do. I mean, I'm always a bit reluctant to talk about these things when we don't have any hard numbers, but it's fair to say that the Lumia 900, both the Sign and the Black version, is sitting at the top of the Amazon wireless sort of bestseller charts. So that's quite an achievement. They're doing well there. I think partly you can put that down to the attractive pricing Amazon had. They've had it at $49, so a little bit cheaper than the official AT&T channels.
So hold on. Is it $49 and you get $100 back?
Yes, so they're going to pay you $50.01 to take this handset, which is only about a month's service, well, less than a month's service, but even so, it's still a very good deal. The other thing was AT&T have actually said that the handset sales have exceeded expectations. Now, I don't know what that means, apart from being a mark in Harry Potter's owl examinations. And the final sort of bit of evidence is that from reports coming in from Twitter, social media, and other sites, that AT&T have actually sold out of the Lumia 900 in a number of shops. It's not entirely clear whether that's related to them sort of restocking to put the new software on for this connectivity bug we're talking about. But it does seem that it's hard to get available. And just looking at the kind of that buzz factor, there do seem to be an awful lot of people picking up a Lumia 900. So it'll be very interesting to see what the final numbers are for those in due course.
Nokia, of course, also put out a profits warning last week, and we've got all the details and digestion of that back on the website, along with it with some graphs and stuff. But I'm going to cherry pick out one thing out of there. We've always talked that, you know, Nokia's change is a long-term thing. So they had a Q4 for last year, 1 million-ish Windows phones being sold, which is mostly just the launch of the 800 in the UK and European territories. For Q1, which of course does include T-Mobile and the Nokia Lumia 710 in the States and more sales of the 800 more territories, 2 million Windows phones. If we can get 4 million out of Q2 and AT&T and the 900, then we have a lovely mathematical progression going on, which I quite like the look of. But 2 million Windows phones in Q1, let's zero in on that number. Good or bad? Steve, were we expecting more than that?
Before I give my comment, I mean, that mathematical progression looks excellent. If they can carry on 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, it's the old grains of rice on a chessboard thing. I think they'll take over the world in 2016. But moving on, I think 2 million, I'm actually a bit disappointed by this. I've been used from the Symbian world. I mean, this is back in the dawn of smartphones, back N95 days. We were starting to look at 5 million smartphones per quarter quite regularly, and now of course we're in the days of Android taking off and iPhone 4s, and we're looking at companies shipping 20 million smartphones per quarter, 25 million per quarter, and here along comes Microsoft and Nokia shipping 2 million in a quarter. Now that's all sales of Lumia 800 and 710 across the world. I think that's disappointing. I was looking for something closer to 4.
Rafe, now you had a look at all the numbers and dissected it. Is Steve being controversial, or does he have a point?
No, I think it's not unreasonable to say it's a bit disappointing. I mean, I myself was probably expecting something between the 2 and 2.5 million mark. In all fairness, you know, Q4 of last year was probably nearer 750,000 units, given the way they fudged the numbers a bit to get to the million mark. And so there's been a fairly dramatic increase into Q2. And one kind of has to bear in mind that we are just talking about two models for Q1, and we are talking about kind of a launch period. So it does take a time, especially on a brand new ecosystem. You know, you compare it to something like Android, where there are quite literally hundreds of devices. But of course, people will then go, but with the iPhone, Apple managed to do X, Y, and Z. And that's failed, though. Again, if you look at the first two quarters for the iPhone, it's not all that different, although they did far better, I think it's fair to say, in their second full quarter. I think it will really depend on what happens in sort of Q2 and certainly Q3 and Q4. So while the 2 million strikes me as a bit disappointing, it's kind of within the boundaries of what I was expecting. I think most analysts seem to agree with that. And it is, it's not unreasonable for Nokia to say, you know, they've established a beachhead in the initial momentum. What's kind of really important is what comes next. Because, of course, you know, they've launched, I think, now into 42 different markets with Lumia devices. And, of course, it's not every operator in those markets. And a good half of those markets have actually come, you know, from mid-February onwards. And so it's not like it's a full quarter on all of that. So it'll be really interesting to see what they can do in Q2. And yes, as you say, 4 million, if they get there, I think people will start to, you know, pay a bit more attention, because then as we roll into Q3, we'll have the 610 coming on the stream, and then Q4 may well see some more Windows Phone devices, even the next generation ones, and we may even see some announcements over the summer. We'll have to wait and see. But yes, I'm with Steve. Maybe a little bit disappointing, but not really outside my expectations.
David, do you want to pitch in on this one, or are you just going to sit there and go, well, they need to have it running on Linux?
Well, they do. But no, I think this situation is going to persist for a while. Yes, 2 million is extremely modest figures, I'm sorry to say. I mean, especially if you compare it to what Android's doing. But I think, yes, they're getting the beachhead that they need. But if we want to make that analogy to perhaps D-Day, it's going to be that, well, they've made the landing, but I think they're going to be dug in fighting an attrition for several weeks rather than a day or two. And I apologize to anyone if I've done my history incorrectly.
Essentially, they're being Robert Mitchum from The Longest Day film.
Yes,
that's exactly right. I mean, we have to be realistic, of course, because it's all very well to say they should be doing this and this. I don't think there's anything Nokia have done particularly wrong in the launches, and rolling out a new product like this does take time. And it's not so much what Nokia have done wrong, it's they're just facing, you know, really fierce competition. And you could talk about they should be doing such and such with the handsets or the software, but we've expressed in the past, you know, there is kind of this limitations with both hardware and software, what you can deliver in a certain time. And it does come back to me one thing, you know, when I sat in February the 11th last year, if you told me that Nokia was going to sell 2 million Windows Phone devices in Q1 of, you know, the following year, I probably would have said, yeah, I'm not sure I buy that. They may be launching the devices then. So in one sense, I still think they're a bit ahead of the game there. You know, they launched them 3 months ahead of what I expected them to do, and a bit longer in the case of some commentators. So, you know, all of these kind of judgments are taken in context in a relative. So even so, I think that momentum is established. You know, the real big question is what comes in the sort of second half of the year.
And we will keep an eye on that one as we go through. Very briefly, Chevron WP7. Power users will know what I'm talking about. This is basically a third-party service that allowed you to unlock your handset to allow you to run uncertified software. It didn't change anything about your SIM or your network connectivity or anything, but it did allow you to run Homebrew. And it was geared up so developers didn't have to pay $100 to go into Microsoft's App Hub. The Chevron tool was $10. The service basically sold out of its 10,000 limit back in January. They said, we're going to decide what to do with it. They've now decided that the Chevron WP7 service is not going to go forward. Because, yes, 10,000 people bought it, wanted to run software, but not many of them went up to become Microsoft developers and join an App Hub, which I think Microsoft were kind of hoping for, run it sort of like as a taster or a freeware. But Ray, I just want to raise up one good thing about this. It means that 10,000 people was really hungry to run software, to help develop apps, to contribute to app developers somewhere like XDA forums. You know, Chevron WP7 has actually shown that the app situation in Windows was quite nice.
Yes, it's demonstrated that there's a large amount of enthusiasm out there. And, I mean, while I would have personally liked to see it continue, I can also understand the Microsoft viewpoint that, you know, they want to... This was done for developers, basically. They were trying to encourage ones who didn't want to pay the 99 App Hub fee. And the good thing is, for everyone who has signed up for one of these, Chevron Unlock tokens is now entitled to a year's worth of app membership for free. Normally costs $100. So they're getting $100 for $10, effectively. It does, you know, shut down those who are doing homebrew software. We've seen this all across kind of the smartphone platform. People like to unlock their devices. They like the freedom aspect of it. But it is worth pointing out, it is, relatively speaking, a small minority of users. I mean, it's probably applying to less than 1% or so. Exact numbers are always difficult to come by. And I suspect a lot of people using this were doing it purely because they fancied using some of the homebrew software. For example, you know, us on the All About Windows Phone team were using it to get access to a screenshot application, which we're using in reviews. And I imagine there's quite a few people out there like that. I think it's an interesting one. I'd like to see some way of unlocking the handset being available. But, you know, obviously there are security concerns, and it's actually the legal concerns more than anything else about indemnifying people against things, and especially when you're running on a network. It's not something that's necessarily as simple as people might think it is. So while I'm sort of all for the banner of freedom and allowing to do things, I can also understand from the sort of the network, the manufacturer, and the sort of platform Microsoft point of view, it's not a simple equation.
I think it's possibly a short-sighted view, though, because especially because of a security aspect. With Chevron, they had a controlled way to open up the phone for people to run homebrew applications, but now they've shut that down. That doesn't make those people go away. So I think they've opened the door and invited people to start hacking the platform.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, it would be good if there was some way out there, and I would have thought better have control. I can understand, you know, why there can't be. And you're right. I mean, there are custom ROMs out there for Windows Phone and various ways to get them onto the handset, and that will also get them into the unlock state. For those who want to do unlock while, if you like, following the rules, you can, of course, sign up to App Hub, and for every App Hub account of an individual, you get 3 unlock allowances, so you can unlock up to 3 phones at the same time. I imagine for anyone who's got a Chevron token at the moment, they'll take advantage of it for a year, but I would imagine a lot of people who just signed up for it to get access to Homebrew will not bother renewing it in a year's time. So it'll be interesting to see whether Microsoft or indeed anyone else comes out with something to sort of ameliorate this issue. It's not unique to Windows Phone, but yeah, I kind of shed a tear when I saw this Chevron WP7 news.
I'm going to throw in one suggestion, which is you have a student App Hub membership. It doesn't allow you the ability to publish to the marketplace, but it does unlock the handset. In other words, move Chevron into sort of lower tier at App Hub of, say, $10, $20. So if nothing else, Microsoft can keep it, you know, as David said, keep the majority of people who want to do it, you know, don't send them to the dark corners of the internet. Keep them close and make sure that everything stays as stable as possible. Comments are always welcome on that one. We talk about this stuff in the flow section of our website. Whenever there's short news stories throughout the week, it will go into a flow section. You can leave all your comments there as well. If you're looking at the website, it is on the right. If you're looking at it on our All About Windows Phone application, which I understand is being worked on and hammered a little bit more as we speak, Rafe?
Yes, that's right. I mean, Flow is integrated into the main content column in that, but yes, you can expect to see a new version of the application before too long. So one of the big features is the much requested dark theme coming in. There's going to be some performance and bug fixes as well, but we're also interested in hearing any feedback or improvements you might like to see in the application. So you can email me, rafe@allaboutwindowsphone.com, or leave a comment on this podcast, and we'll be taking all those suggestions on board and trying to integrate some of them into the next version of the application.
And speaking of applications, it's the end of the podcast, so it's time for our applications of the week. What have we all been using in the world of Windows Phone? What's caught our eye? What do we think you all out there should be having a look at? Or, in Rafe's case, listen to?
That's right, Ewan. My app of the week is the BBC Podcast Lounge. It's rather a nicely put together application that allows you to browse through the BBC, that's British Broadcasting Corporation, for those that don't know, podcast catalogue. They provide a lot of their radio content in the form of downloadable podcasts. So for fans of The Archers like me, this makes it a very easy way to get your episode fix on your phone. Of course, there's a load of other podcasts on there, a couple of hundred at least, I think, everything from BBC4, Radio 4's Today programme to stuff, music from Radio 1, Radio 2 and Radio 3. It's been nicely put together. It's very easy to do. You can pin your favourite podcast to the homepage, download the most recent episodes and all of that. An impressive example of a metro application. It's not officially endorsed by the BBC or anything. It's been done by a third-party developer. I think it's the same one that does the BBC Radio Player, which is another great application if you want to listen to the BBC radio streams on the go. So thoroughly recommended.
I love the fact, and it's so very English. It goes, oh, it's the British Broadcasting Corporation, if you don't know about it. And you can listen to The Archers, the Today programme, where all I'm thinking of is you can get Five Lives Fighting Talk on this, which is all sports and football and banter and men basically slagging off other men for an hour. But there you go. It takes all kinds. Steve, what do you have that's going to keep us secure in Windows Phone for the week?
Oh, you like your slinky links, don't you?
I've been watching old back episodes of Bullseye on Challenge TV.
Well, that's wonderful as that sounds. I've been looking at Password Genie. I'm a bit of a sucker for secure database, something to keep all my pins and passwords and security numbers all safe. I've been a long-time fan of HandySafe, and I have did a news post about that and all about Windows Phone a couple of months ago. They don't seem to have made much progress with it, although that does have a rather nice desktop client. But Password Genie, and there's a trial version in the Windows Phone marketplace, it's a really, really slick, proper Metro UI interface with things like an integrated password strength meter, and it's got integrated backup to SkyDrive, so it keeps an encrypted copy of your entire database on SkyDrive and various archive copies. So if you change your password or delete something and then want to go back to a previous version, you can do it. It's all backed up to the cloud. There are quite a few gaps in terms of the overall functionality that I would like to see, either a desktop client or a cloud-based client, a way of editing and pasting information into the database using a desktop computer and perhaps a web interface. But that aside, well worth having a look at, and I'll have a full review up on the site more or less around the time you listen to this.
There we go. David, what do we have from up in Hull that is going to keep us amused and keeping an eye on things on Windows Phone from yourself?
Well, my application this week is called FeedBurner Stats, and I'm going to assume anyone who's interested in this knows that FeedBurner is a Google-owned RSS pass-through service that lets you get analytics and AdSense on your RSS feeds. And there's quite a few applications, actually, for FeedBurner on Windows Phone, but I've picked FeedBurner Stats because it's just a nice, simple application that you can add other feeds that you want to track, and then for each feed, you just have like a free-filled panorama. You get a table of like day-by-day stats of your readers, hits, and your reach, and there's a summary pane so you can get your better, averaged, and worst stats. And there's a chart view as well, so you can keep an eye on who's reading your RSS feed. And I've been doing this just to put in a cheeky plug for something I'm doing. For any of the brilliant people out there who follow my writing on All About Windows Phone and beyond, I now have an RSS feed of everything I write, just all stuff exclusively by me. And if you go to davidgilson.co.uk/publications, you find a link to the feed there, and then I can see my reader count go up and up and up on this app.
Well, I'm going to finish up, and I'm actually going to finish up with something that's built into Windows Phone that I've been making a huge amount of use of this week, and that is the ability to link mailboxes. As the Eurovision Song Contest gets ever closer, I'm actually doing a whole bundle of stuff for a number of sites, my own Eurovision sites, writing for newspapers, some radio broadcasters as well. And they all have given me an email address. And so I'm getting lots of things coming in and everything. So what I've done is I've linked all these mailboxes up on my Windows Phone into one sort of joined up mailbox, which is all my Eurovision mail coming in, and it keeps it separate from like my personal mail. It's not like where you have an all-in-one solution where you have to look at all your emails. This shows me just the ones that I want to see, like a filter of just all the Eurovision ones. And it can be done for a whole multiple of things, because most of us have a number of emails from all our different websites. It keeps it clear from the personal, keeps it clear from the business, but it collates all the ones I want to do, and it just makes it look like another application. You can pin it as a live tile, you can have it in in the application list. And of course, it's very easy to reverse out again to unlink the mailboxes when it all finishes. And again, it's just one of these little touches that somebody has actually sat down and thought about when designing Windows Phone and the interface and went, this would be really useful and cool, and it just works. And even if that slogan's been used by somebody else, I think it's very appropriate here. So there won't be a link to that application back on the website, but to David, Grace, and Steve's, we'll have them linked to back on the website in all the show notes as well. So you can also leave your comments. And also, if you think that there's an application that you want us to have a look at that should be an application of the week, drop us an email, get in touch, and let us know. It's as simple as that. Anyway, that is our podcast for the week. Thank you once more for listening to our insights into the world of Windows Phone. Thank you to Rafe Banford.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
To David Gilson.
Thank you for joining us this week, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
To Steve Litchfield.
A goodbye, and I'm just out the door testing a new accessory for review on the site, the Beach Boy bike mount. I'm going to go bike riding with my Lumia 800.
Okay, well, don't drink and drive. Have the cider after you're off the bike, Steve, okay?
That's fine, because it's waterproof. The whole point of the Beach Boys, I can pour my cider over it, and it won't get affected at all.
Okay, stay off the roads, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll catch you next week. Ta-ra for now.